Today is Friday, March the 27th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. March 28th, No King's Protests. The fight against the war on Iran is at the centre of the fight against Trump's dictatorship. By the Socialist Equality Party, US. Workers and young people are marching across the United States Saturday in the third round of No King's demonstrations. More than 7,000 events are planned in all 50 states, together with the massive anti-ICE protests that swept Minneapolis and cities across the country in January 2026. These mobilizations express enormous social and political opposition to the Trump administration. The question that must now be answered is, toward what end and on what political basis must this opposition be developed? Opposition to the escalating war against Iran must be placed at the center of opposition to the Trump regime. Under the standards established at the Nuremberg trials after the Second World War, the initiation of a war of aggression is the supreme international crime. Those who launched it are war criminals, and those who, in Congress, in the media, and in the political establishment, are providing a political cover are accomplices in these crimes. The war is now in its fourth week, and the trajectory points unmistakably toward a massive escalation. At least 2,200 US Marines have been deployed to the region. The 82nd Airborne Division is being readied. Trump's supposed 15-point plan for peace was designed to be rejected by Iran and to serve as a pretext for a grand invasion. The consequences of a land war against Iran, a country of more than 90 million people, would dwarf anything the American people have been told to expect. And underlying all of this is the danger of nuclear war. The Trump administration has pointedly refused to rule out the use of nuclear weapons against Iran. The human cost is already staggering. Thousands of Iranian civilians have been killed in the bombing campaign. The escalation of the war will mean tens or hundreds of thousands of Iranian dead, along with thousands of US soldiers. The economic consequences are already being felt throughout the world economy. Oil prices have risen 35% since the Strait of Hormuz was closed, driving up the cost of fuel, food, and every commodity whose production and transport depend on energy. Trump has proposed a $1.5 trillion military budget, a 50% increase over current spending, while demanding an immediate additional $200 billion to fund the war. These resources will be extracted directly from the living standards of the American working class, from the schools, hospitals, housing, and social services that have already been gutted by decades of austerity. The war against Iran did not begin on February 28, 2026. It is the culmination of an unrelenting 47-year campaign waged under both Democrats and Republicans, whose central objective has never changed, to overturn the results of the 1979 Iranian Revolution and restore American imperial dominance over Iran and the broader Middle East. It is inextricably connected to the wider war, including the invasion of Venezuela at the beginning of the year and the preparations for conflict, above all with China. The assault on democratic rights is inseparable from the explosion of imperialist violence. From its first day in office, the Trump administration has operated as a conspiracy against the Constitution. The nationwide expansion of ICE deployments has been accompanied by the murder of Renee Nicole Good and then Alex Pretty in Minneapolis, warning shots in blood of what the regime is prepared to do. The administration has now extended this reign of terror into public infrastructure itself, deploying ICE at airports, and, most recently, issuing threats to deploy the National Guard there as well, turning transportation hubs into militarized zones, and conditioning the population to the presence of armed federal forces in everyday life. As Trump advisor Steve Bannon bluntly stated, the ICE presence at airports is a test run for the 2026 midterm elections, a rehearsal for intimidation, and the broader plan to undermine elections and normalise quasi-martial law conditions. The war abroad and the war on the social and democratic rights of the working class are two sides of the same war. Trump is not a political aberration in an otherwise stable democracy. He represents a class, the capitalist oligarchy, which has broken with legality because it can no longer govern through democratic forms. Trump has risen to the head of a political system that presides over unprecedented social inequality, endless war, and the enrichment of a tiny elite at the expense of society as a whole. The Democratic Party is not an opponent of Trump's regime, but a collaborator. The differences between the two parties on the war, and on all matters essential to the interests of the ruling class, are of a tactical character. In January, as Trump was massing forces for the assault on Iran, the entire Democratic leadership in the House and Senate voted for the $839 billion military appropriations bill, their first public statements after the assassination of Iran's supreme leader were to endorse it. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer declared on the Senate floor on March the 2nd, "I will not shed a tear for Khomeini." Former Democratic National Committee, DNC, Chair Donna Brazile stated this week, "Democrats understand that Iran has posed a threat, not just to the region, the Gulf, but to the world itself." The New York Times, speaking for the Democrats, published an editorial declaring that there is a reasonable debate to have about the wisdom of this war, and that Trump could make a fact-based argument for confronting the regime now. This is what passes for dissent in the American establishment press. The principal fear of the Democratic Party, a party of Wall Street, and the intelligence agencies, is the development of a mass movement from below that breaks out of its control and challenges not merely the administration, but the capitalist system and the imperial state that both parties defend. The No Kings Coalition, which consists of groups in or around the Democratic Party, has downplayed the war against Iran in its promotional material. Indivisible, a central force in the coalition, was founded by former Democratic congressional staffers and functions openly as an instrument for Democratic Party electoral operations. The AFL-CIO and major unions are promoted as co-organisers of the demonstrations, even as they maintain silence or offer empty procedural objections on the war and do nothing to mobilise workers' power against it. Bernie Sanders, headlining the flagship Minneapolis rally Saturday, mentions Iran as one item in a litany of dangerous times, a rhetorical gesture that places no obligation on anyone and commits the Democratic Party to nothing. The role of Sanders, along with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other members of the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, is to channel opposition behind a pro-war party of the capitalist oligarchy. The social force that must be mobilized is the working class, in the United States and internationally. Saturday's demonstrations coincide with a growing eruption of the class struggle. In the months since the war began, a widening wave of strikes and strike threats has spread across key industries and services, from the JBS meatpacking strike in Greeley to walkouts and strike votes among education workers, nurses, manufacturing workers, and public sector employees. The working class is the decisive social force in this society. It produces all wealth. It runs the factories, hospitals, schools, transportation systems, ports, warehouses, and communications networks. But this power can only be realized through conscious political organization, independent of and in opposition to both parties of the ruling class and the trade union bureaucracies. The Socialist Equality Party insists that the war against Iran must be opposed without qualification and brought to an immediate end, along with the broader US-Israeli assault on the Middle East. But ending the war and driving out the Trump regime cannot be achieved through appeals to Congress, the courts, or the Democratic Party, which is a party of Wall Street and the Pentagon, and an accomplice in these crimes. It requires the independent political mobilization of the working class, workers and young people, acting as a conscious force against war, dictatorship, and the capitalist oligarchy. This means building new organizations of struggle, rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school, and neighborhood, independent of the trade union apparatus, which exists to isolate, contain, and shut down workers' struggles, linked nationally and internationally through the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC. These committees must unite workers across industries and borders and prepare coordinated action against the war machine, up to and including the perspective of a political general strike organized from below. The choice that confronts the working class is not between Trump and the Democrats. It is a choice the great Marxists of the 20th century identified with increasing urgency, and which the developments of the 21st have made undeniable. Socialism or barbarism. Either the working class develops its own political program, its own organizations, its own leadership, and takes conscious action to overthrow the capitalist system that produces war, dictatorship, and social devastation, or that system will continue in ever more violent forms to destroy the conditions of human civilization. I'm all for everyone going on strike. JBS, Meatpackers in Greeley, Colorado, continue historic strike. By Jacob Cross and Dan Conway. Nearly 4,000 meatpackers at the JBS Swift plant in Greeley, Colorado, continued their historic strike on Thursday in the largest meatpacking strike in the United States since the 1950s and the first major walkout in the industry since the Hormel and IBP strikes in the 1980s. The walkout is part of a broader movement of workers in the United States and internationally, who are increasingly entering into struggle against rising inequality, soaring healthcare costs, and stagnant wages. At the Greeley plant, many workers make less than $25 an hour and have not received a raise in nearly a year. JBS, which reported fourth quarter net profits of $415 million, has answered workers' demands with an insulting proposal of a 60-cent raise, followed by just 20 cents the following year. The strike has underscored the international unity of the working class. Many workers at the plant are immigrants, and more than 50 languages are spoken inside the facility. Reporters for the WSWS spoke with workers on Thursday and distributed hundreds of leaflets and statements in multiple languages, including Creole, Spanish, French, English, and Somali. Workers responded warmly, with many approaching reporters and simply stating their preferred language before being handed material they could read immediately. The UFCW bureaucracy, meanwhile, has sought to suppress and isolate the strike. On the picket line, union officials questioned why WSWS reporters were speaking with workers, reflecting their hostility to any independent discussion among the rank and file. Even as they attempted to monitor contact with workers, officials acknowledged that some production is continuing inside the plant. When a WSWS reporter noted that it appeared scabs were entering the plant, the UFCW bureaucrat corrected the WSWS, stating those scabbing on the strike were, in fact, replacement workers. Against this effort to contain the strike, workers who spoke with the WSWS expressed determination to broaden the struggle and win support from other sections of the working class. Sam Tu, an immigrant from Haiti, said she has been working at the plant for a total of about 3 years, off and on since 2020. She described the dangerous working conditions inside the plant, especially if you don't have the specific equipment you need. She mentioned mesh gloves that workers wear to avoid cuts, but that often go missing. If you don't wear it, you can cut yourself. If you lose it, or it's stolen, you need to buy it, and it comes out of our paycheck. When I first came here to work in 2020, we weren't forced to pay for equipment, she added. Samto recalled working when COVID-19 first flooded through the plant, leaving hundreds of workers sick and killing at least six. She said she remembered a co-worker falling ill and being told it was okay for him to stay home and recover, but that the company then fired him for not showing up to work. WSWS reporters raised the recent intervention by supporters in Brazil at the JBS Hagare plant in Sao Paulo. We asked Samto in order to secure livable wages and safe working conditions if she would support other JBS workers going on strike with Greeley workers. Yes, of course. It is not like we are asking for a lot. She added, if workers in Brazil do that, I can say I appreciate that and their support. Alex has worked at the plant for 2 years. He said the line speed was really fast, and that managers would speed up the line so workers would not get paid for their full 8 hours. Quote, they're expecting quality products, but some, like white bone, take some time. You have to put more effort into that, and it takes training to do this. You have to go fast, and sometimes you don't get it right the first time. You have to do it multiple times. It gets stuck, and then your hand starts to hurt, and the injury risk goes up the faster you work. The most important tool we have are our knives, and when we are forced to work with an old or dull one and can't get it sharpened, it sucks. Unquote. Alex, like every worker the WSWS spoke to on the picket line, rejected the insulting 60-cent initial raise proposed by the company, which does not even keep pace with inflation. I don't like the offer, Alex said. It doesn't feel like we are going to get much. I don't know if you guys heard, but JBS is making a lot more money recently. They don't want to pay us. How can JBS go and pay for stadiums, donate to politicians, and then say there is no money for us? He said. Last January, Pilgrim's Pride, one of the largest poultry processors in the United States and a subsidiary of JBS, made a $5 million donation to Donald Trump's 2025 Inauguration Committee, the largest contribution of any company. 6 months after the bribe, JBS began publicly trading on the New York Stock Exchange. The company had sought regulatory approval from the Securities and Exchange Commission for more than a decade, but was only approved last year, following the contribution to Trump. The delay in approval was due in part to the outright corruption of Joesley and Wesley Batista, brothers and the largest shareholders in JBS. The billionaires were jailed for 6 months in 2017 and 2018 after admitting to bribing nearly 1,900 politicians in Brazil. United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7, which claims they represent some 3,800 workers at the plant, previously indicated that the strike would last only 2 weeks. Alex said he had not received any update on negotiations between the union and the company. Nothing yet, he said. They are just having a few conferences. Turning to attacks on immigrants, Alex refuted characterizations that immigrants were lazy or stealing from native-born workers. I feel like we are mostly hard workers out here. A lot of Mexicans built the United States, Alex said. He noted that JBS has plans to expand production in Mexico, and that he would support other JBS workers going on strike in support of the Greeley workers. Absolutely, 100%, Alex said. He added, even if they are smaller plants, if we are going through the same thing, we are going through the same thing. I'm all for it. Everyone going on strike. On the war against Iran, Alex was clear. I don't stand for war. I don't think the president should just decide to start bombing people. We should be united in peace. British military to seize Russian ships, threatening shootouts. By Thomas Cripps. The UK military will be sent to board ships suspected of being part of Russia's sanctions-evading shadow fleet, threatening shootouts between British and Russian soldiers. Labour Prime Minister Keir Starmer perversely declared that this was about keeping this country safe and protecting British interests here and abroad, in an increasingly volatile and dangerous world. In fact, it threatens direct conflict between nuclear-armed powers. A government announcement makes clear how reckless the plans are. Military and law enforcement specialists have been put through their paces in preparation for a number of scenarios in recent weeks, including boarding vessels that don't surrender, are armed, or use high-tech pervasive surveillance to evade capture. According to the BBC, quote, specialist military units have been undertaking training in recent weeks to wargame different scenarios, including how to deal with armed crews. That training is understood to now be complete, and Ministry of Defence officials are working on the assumption that the first operation of this type will happen sooner rather than later. Those involved could include the Special Boat Service and the Royal Marines, depending on the level of resistance expected from crews aboard the shadow vessels. Unquote. These are the Royal Navy's elite combat units. This January, the British military facilitated an American operation to seize the Russian-flagged Marinera in the sea south of Iceland, in connection with the US blockade of Venezuelan oil. From that point, UK government lawyers were set to work, formulating the legal basis for British soldiers carrying out these raids themselves. They have decided on the 2018 Sanctions and Money Laundering Act. Other European nations have already seized alleged Russian Shadow Fleet ships. According to the International Institute for Strategic Studies, Belgium, Finland, and France have seized or detained tankers. Germany, Italy, Latvia, Norway, and Sweden have boarded or detained cargo and bulk vessels. These operations have largely been carried out on the charge of ships flying a false flag, interpreted as the ship being without nationality, and therefore liable to boarding by government vessels of any other state under Article 110 of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. Belgian Special Forces boarded and seized the Ethera oil tanker in the North Sea early this month for falsely flying the Guinean flag. French forces seized the Grinch in the Mediterranean in January for falsely flying the Comoros flag. The interests at stake, and hence the potential for armed clashes, are enormous. The US and Europe have collectively identified and sanctioned over 540 Shadow Fleet vessels, according to the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the CSIS. These and others move an estimated $87 billion to $100 billion worth of oil per year, around 65% of Russia's seaborne oil trade. Given increasing Ukrainian pressure on Russian shipping in the Black Sea, more is being routed north of Europe, passing around Britain through either the North Sea or the English Channel. 42 sanctioned vessels travelled through the Channel this January alone, raising the prospect of frequent military deployments and standoffs. Moscow has responded by selectively reflagging ships as Russian, affording them state protection. In January, the sanctioned tanker, General Skobelev, was escorted through the channel by the missile corvette Boyki. The Labour government has not said, and the media has not asked, what the British military would do in such a case. Given Starmer has declared seizing Russian ships a matter of protecting British interests, and his housing minister, Steve Reid, told the BBC this week that there is no precedent for a vote in Parliament for defending British people. Labour's position is that a shooting war can be started with Russia without so much as a press conference. UK imperialism has form when it comes to staging naval provocations. An important event in the lead-up to the Ukraine war was its sending HMS Defender into waters around Russian-claimed Crimea to the point of forcing warning shots from a Russian patrol boat and jet. British naval expertise and equipment have also been provided directly to Ukraine since the war began, with The Sun reporting in 2022 that the SBS trained troops in the country's elite 73rd Naval Special Purpose Centre. The British government reported in August 2023 that a further 900 Ukrainian Marines had received training from the Royal Navy's 42 Commando and 47 Commando Raiding Group. This January, 42 Commando carried out boarding drills on the auxiliary ship SD Northern River at Devonport Naval Base and reconnaissance activities along the coastlines around Plymouth, according to Force News, as part of Exercise Hyperion Storm. The exercise was aimed at confirming the UK's readiness to lead NATO's special operations capability from July under its high readiness, rapidly deployable Allied Reaction Force of roughly 4,000 soldiers. Speaking ahead of a summit of the UK-led Joint Expeditionary Force encompassing Denmark, Estonia, Finland, Iceland, Latvia, Lithuania, and the Netherlands, Norway, and Sweden, Starmer told reporters, "We have to accept that there's a war on two fronts. There's the Iranian conflict and the continuing Ukrainian conflict." For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.